Max Chadwick of Pro Football Focus joins the show for a second time this year. He was with us earlier in the season to kind of recap last year, and he's back again. We talk NCAA 25, the offseason content grind, what the Hawkeyes have to look forward to this year, and how are they going to fare in the new Big Ten? What are the sticking points? Where will they excel? All of it. Thank you for joining today. Let's have a day. Let's go. Walk-ons fans, another podcast today. A quick hitter. We're joined by Max Chadwick again. Got him earlier this spring, late winter, early spring before the draft. Max, you joined us to talk about Cooper DeJean, a couple draft picks for the Hawkeyes, the Caden Proctor madness that was going on between Iowa and Alabama back then. Now we are deeper into the summer. Welcome back to the show, first of all. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's right around again, man.
Do you just do this all day? They send you all over the place. Hey, here's six links for the day, and this is where you jump in.
A lot of times, yeah. A lot of times, Dave just sends me, "Hey, you're on this day." So I usually do a couple or a few of them a day. And in between that, I have obviously all the articles I got to write and the shows, our own shows that we got to host at PFF. So it's a lot of fun. I'm never going to complain about talking college football with anyone I can, obviously. So I'm always grateful to be on some of these things.
I have tons of friends who love college football, probably more than I do. I played college football. I'm probably not nearly as much of a fan or like a college football guy as a lot of like maybe you or some of my buddies are. It just seems like it could be exhausting, but we're in an exciting time of the year. And I guess right now is about when it actually starts to get, maybe more fun to talk about. The last couple months on our show, and I don't know about your show, Max is the host of the PFF College Football Show. Is that correct?
Yeah, correct.
Got it. Last few months have been a little dry on the content. Is that dead season?
Yeah, I actually would maybe push back on that a little, for us, because the college football video game came out, so we had a lot to talk about with that, fortunately. So that's also a blessing, right? Because I think there's so many people now that, like you said yourself, like I'm not really a huge college football guy, but everyone's playing this video game, it seems like now. And now I feel like everyone's kind of heading into the season with more knowledge about, okay, who are the players to know, all that, than ever before, which I think is great. That people are now even more so care about college football. So, I mean, yeah, last few months we've been trying to, just a lot of rankings, honestly. Yeah. It's been a lot of, top 10 quarterbacks, top literally every position you could think of, we ranked the top 10 at.
Sure.
And then also like top 10 units, right? No, we haven't done long snappers. We didn't.
Come on, that's me. I was that guy. Come on now.
We actually have long snapping metrics at PFF, so we could do it.
Do you?
We do. So we could do it, but we are currently just trying to get as many views as possible. And unfortunately, I don't know if the long snapper video would do that well. Maybe it would. Maybe it would pop off. People would love that. But we haven't done that.
Let me pump it, man. I got a little bit of a following. I think we could get some views on that.
All right. I'll talk to my guys and see what we could do. Honestly,
I could help out too if you need some. I'm not as tagged in as I used to be. I used to know, obviously when I was playing, I knew every other guy. And some of them actually personally, and a lot of the better guys around the country. But I could get back in, do a little research.
Right. Yeah, I would do that, man.
Let me get nerdy on that for a second. Who do you have, and what do you know, or do you actually understand any of those long snapping metrics that you guys have? Or
yeah, so
what are those? What do you guys go off of there?
Let me pull it up right now. So I would love
to see what that looks like.
A lot of them is like accuracy metrics. So like we judge. I don't personally do any of the grading, sure. So I can't tell you exactly what they look at. But what I know they look at is some of the accuracy of it. So like if it's obviously like you would know, like in the pocket, like where you wanted to have it, or if it's too high or if it's too low. So obviously you get a negative grade if it's inaccurate. I believe we time it as well. So it's also like time from snap until it hits the holder or punter's hands. What's that timing like? So a lot of that basically. And also like we grade sand punts. We grade, does a long snapper get downfield, make the tackle? Like he gets a positive grade for that as well. So
I love
there's a lot that goes into it, honestly, more than I would anticipate for long snapping stuff. But yeah, we literally, when we say we grade every player and every play in every game, we're not excluding, you know, special teams guys either. So we do have long snapping metrics that are pretty fun to look at.
That's really funny to hear, because essentially what you described there, and I've probably mentioned it a couple times over the course of us doing the show, but it's essentially how I would go in after each game and grade myself. And it's not like I'm giving myself like a, you know, like a PFF grade of like a, you know, I had a graded out at like 87.6 last game, but it was essentially like, it was more of like those college classes that don't really matter. You get a satisfactory or a non-satisfactory.
Sure.
It's a pass fail. And, we were just trying to figure out if I was passing or failing. It's really funny though, to hear that. Yeah, it's essentially just like a strike zone, the speed. It's hilarious. Yeah. 'Cause I remember when I came out of my senior year, the only ranking that a lot in specialists are nerdy, right? So we're always looking for like, hey, what am I ranked? You know, like what is there metrics on me? So to hear is funny. And the only thing I could find is like ESPN had me as like the fourth best guy coming out of college that year. And I was like, I wonder who, yeah, that's cool. Right. But more so I was like, who actually sat down and put this together? Did they just look up long snappers who were seniors and put us in like alphabetical order, or how did this happen? So it's funny to hear that, that you guys have that. And I'm sure it's fun to go through those rankings. Speaking of the video game, have you been just headstrong into that? How old are you?
I'm 25. So I've been pretty into it recently. We've done a lot of, I've actually had to do a lot of preview stuff. So I haven't had as much time as I'd like to play the video game. And I've been on trips. Like this time of the year, I'm like trying to take advantage of the summer as much as humanly possible. 'Cause I know once the season kicks off, like it is nonstop from there. Yeah. But I'm currently the offensive coordinator at Kennesaw State. I screwed up. I didn't take a head coaching job after my first year, so I think I'm stuck as the OC again, which I didn't want to do. I declined the Marshall and Southern Miss job thinking I would get a better job, because I led Kennesaw State to a freaking Fiesta Bowl. I led them to the Cup of a playoff my first year, and I was like, oh, I'm getting a better job than these, and I didn't get a better job than any of those. In fact, those were my only two offers. So now I'm stuck again as the OC. But yeah, I'm currently the OC at Kennesaw State for my second season right now.
Congratulations on that. That's incredible. So I ask your age because you're a little bit younger than me, and I feel like I'm turning 30 this year. And I think for guys like right in my age range, maybe even a little bit older, who were, you know, in the heat of the old college football games, you're talking like Vince Young, you know, 2006 to 2010 era, even all the way up to 2014 when it shut down. The guys who are like in middle school or just in college, just into the college range there, it's like revived their life over the last month or a couple weeks as it's been out. And, I don't have a console to play it. So I'm not in on it, but we have a student who is our producer, who just graduated from Iowa. He's a younger guy, and we've got like a little series coming up this fall where he's going to be like Coach Grant. And he's going to, similar to you, he's going to like take our listeners through like a live stream every Friday night. Like he plays a game every weekend. And it's incredible.
I don't know if you can see behind me, but I have the Couple 25 poster. It's not the cover of the video game, but one of our graphics guys made a cover of the Pop-Tart on it. And just like it's a joke. And we posted it on PFF. And then someone from the, I don't know, wherever, but they took the image that we made and they blew it up into a poster and started selling it on eBay. So I had to buy it. So now I have it hanging up behind me. I wish this was the cover. I think this is a better cover of what the EA has got right now.
The Pop-Tart really, for lack of a better term, popped off last bowl season. That was, I mean, that the fact that became a thing behind you, and that's a poster, that's incredible.
It says that Pop-Tart Bowl, I think, was as pure as college football gets, man. Honestly, like, that was just like the fact that the Pop-Tart was like, people were making jokes like this, like Jesus Christ dying on the cross, right? Where it's like, I want to die for you. I'm here to give my body up for you. Like, he wanted to be eaten. Like, that was just like the funniest thing in the world. Like, how, like, at the end of the game, when it went down into the toaster and then an actual Pop-Tart popped down, the player starts eating it. It was like, this is like, in so many ways, it's almost like repulsive. Like, oh my God, this is like gross. Like, you're like killing this mascot. But in other ways, it's amazing as well. So I just thought it was the funniest thing in the world. That whole bowl game was unbelievably hilarious, in my opinion. I'm happy that it kind of took on a life of its own a little bit.
I agree with you. I think that is the spirit of the bowl games that we want to see. And props to the marketing department for Pop-Tart. And whoever put all that together, because it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned the game. I have never thought about it this way. The game increasing your average fan's knowledge on their mm-hmm. favorite team. I didn't even think about that. But the fact that you actually have the legitimate rosters now, maybe that will help that fan experience inside the stadium now, where they don't even know who they're yelling at or who they're mad at, who missed a block. They're just like screaming completely uninformed. Now, at least maybe they'll know the players because they've played with them on the game. So,
yeah, I mean, look at it. I feel like everyone in the country knows Will Johnson now. Like Will Johnson, the Michigan corner, it's like he's the highest rated player in the game. And now, like, your average fan now, because like before, like in the old College Football Review games, used to be CB number two for Michigan, right? And then like you deduct, obviously, okay, that's supposed to be Will Johnson and all that. But now that you have this NIL, now you have the actual names in the game. There's so many, and everyone, I mean, literally not only college football fans are playing this video game, everyone's playing this video game. So now all of a sudden, you know, hey, I know who the best quarterbacks are. I know who, like, it's like Madden too. Like Madden teaches you about, oh, this guy's the best left tackle in football. And then when you watch him on Sunday, he's like, oh, I know that guy's elite because I know his rating is a 99 overall, right? So I think it's great, because now I feel like a problem for, you know, average casual college football fans, like they just don't know enough about the top players. Now if you play this video game enough, which it seems like everyone is, considering how much money EA has made off this game already, I think it was like $500 million already made off this game. But yeah, now all of a sudden everyone's playing it, they're heading into September and they're looking to be, oh, I know exactly who the best players in the country are, which honestly just makes it so much better that, you know, now what feels like there's a bigger audience for college football than there ever has been.
I think it's a win-win. I thought you were... It's interesting to hear Kennesaw State, because I thought you were a Syracuse guy.
Okay, I think I am gunning for the Syracuse job. I thought starting off as the Syracuse OC or Syracuse head coach would have been like too much. I wanted to start literally from the bottom and build my way up. So the Syracuse, I thought, like, because I went to Syracuse, but I grew up a huge Penn State fan. So I always thought, start off at the bottom, get to Syracuse, kill it there, went into maybe a national title or two there, and then go to Penn State, and that be like my final job.
Build the dynasty, yeah.
But
yeah,
exactly. So I thought starting off at Syracuse, which is like an average ACC school, is just too easy. Yeah. I really wanted to like start off as low as I possibly could, and I thought, what better way than the only new FBS school that we have this year?
Yeah, that's fair. Well, let's get to Iowa, which is obviously what our show is about. What is the general outlook from a college football guy that doesn't have the Hawkeye bias to him? Because obviously, you know, me, my co-hosts, our fan base, as much as we can try to be, you know, fair and you know, look at it logically, we're always going to have a little bit of like, nah, I think the Hawkeyes can get it done if it's on the fence. What do you guys see? What do you personally see as what, you know, what should we expect from the Hawks this season?
Yeah, I think it's still going to be an elite defense, right? That happens every year when you have a guy like Phil Parker coaching up, who I think is probably the best defensive coordinator that we have in college football. I mean, they've had a top 10 defense in the country in each of the last 4 years, and they still have an elite one this year, I think, too. They have, in my opinion, the second best secondary in the country, even after losing Cooper DeJean. You get guys like Sebastian Castro back, Quinn Schultz back, Xavier Nwankwo back. They're loaded on defense in the secondary. And then the linebacker unit, I think, is also the second best linebacker unit in the country as well, with guys like Jay Higgins there, as well as this absolute superstar. So I think that the second and third levels of the defense are absolutely elite. And I think the defense will continue to be really, really well coached up by Phil Parker. And they have superstars on that side of the ball. The question, as it always has been for Iowa, is the offense. Now, there is some reason to be optimistic about them not being absolutely abysmal like they were last year, namely the hire of Tim Lester as the offensive coordinator. You know, you get rid of Brian Ferentz, who, call it what it is, it was kind of nepotism that he was the OC in the first place, right? Kirk Ferentz's son, and he obviously did not do a good job at all of being the offensive coordinator at Iowa. But also, you get back your starting quarterback in Cade McNamara, who I think is a solid starting quarterback, and you bring back your star tight end, Luke Lachey, who I think will really be one of the top tight ends that we have in college football and should continue the Iowa tight end dynasty that they've had in recent memory, right? So I think there is reason to be optimistic. I'm not going to say they are going to make the play. Their schedule is manageable, man, really. I mean, they avoid Oregon. They avoid Michigan. They avoid Penn State. They avoid USC. They play Ohio State, which is probably the one game where I'm like, okay, they won't win that game. But all 11 other games are certainly winnable on their schedule right now. So I was consistently like a top 20, top 25 team because of that defense. And if the offense improves at all, and with that schedule, I mean, yeah, they could win 9, 10 games this year, I think. And if you win 10 games in the Big Ten, you're pretty much guaranteed a playoff spot.
It's going to be interesting to see, because that is the big talk right now, is what should the expectations be with us going into this new Big Ten? It's weird because we don't know how many teams the Big Ten is going to get in this new 12-team playoff. It's said or speculated by a lot of people around the country, like, the SEC and the Big Ten are probably looking at four teams. I mean, there's a legitimate chance that you're going to get four teams in from each of those conferences. You know, you got to see how it plays out, who wins the big games. But like you said, the schedule is favorable. I think on the betting lines, Iowa's favored in 11 games. The only one they aren't is on the road at Ohio State. You look at their schedule as far as the away games other than Ohio State, you're going to Michigan State, to Minnesota, to UCLA, to Maryland. There's no heavy hammer that they run into there this year. They play great at home. Kinnick is a crazy advantage, I would know. And, you know, maybe personally, I look at this best, and maybe this is some Iowa bias too, but I look at this schedule and I think Iowa State might be the linchpin here. I mean, like, quite literally, it's always a tight game. Mm-hmm. Iowa State is just because of that rivalry, and it's because it's early in the season. It's always going to be close. And if you can, you know, chalk that Ohio State loss up, if you can get by Iowa State, you might have enough momentum there to go 11-1, which almost certainly locks you into the college football playoff, potentially the Big Ten championship, which is weird that we're now talking about a playoff spot before a conference championship spot. And then 10-2 might do it. And so, you know, maybe they can slip up there. I think for Iowa, especially with the reputation sort of, you know, the story of their offense and maybe how people view them nationally, they're going to have the right loss to get in with, you know, being 10-2. But it'll be interesting. As you mentioned, though, Lester, McNamara, Lachey. I mean, this offensive, you know, that we're putting out there, both coaching and players, looks pretty different compared to what we had on the back half of last year. And not to mention, and this might go really underrated, maybe even for you guys, I know you guys have probably put out the offensive line rankings by now, and they probably don't get a lot of credit just because they haven't been great. They haven't been, you know, there's been no studs like a Tristan Wirfs or a Tyler Linderbaum the past couple of years, but the offensive line is veteran. I mean, I don't know how many offensive lines in the Big Ten are returning more starts than the Hawkeyes. And that doesn't mean everything, but I go down the line here, and these are names that in Iowa country, people know. Mason Richmond, Bo Stevens, Logan Jones, Connor Colby, and Jennings Dunker, who was sort of a backup last year, a swing guy. Redshirt senior, redshirt junior, redshirt senior, redshirt senior, redshirt junior. And some of those probably have a COVID year in there, so they're like a sixth year. I don't even know. I'm confused on all the COVID years at this point. It is a very veteran offense outside of two receivers. You get the grad transfer quarterback. You get the you got a grad transfer fullback. I mean, this offense is incredibly veteran. Is it, you know, it over here in Hawkeye country, is it wrong to think that if we have the 90th best offense, could we be dangerous to anybody because of that defensive side of the ball? You know, and I don't know what the numbers say from you guys, and I don't know what even we should expect. What would be a good jump when you're the worst offense in the country? But you know, from our side, I think we have a lot to be optimistic about. And I don't know if that's how the outside feels too, but I wouldn't want to be a team that runs into Iowa this year. I know that.
No, I don't think anyone wants to run into Iowa. I think that because of that defense, because of how well coached they are, that they're always going to have an elite defense. And anytime you have that, man, I mean, that's the one problem though with Iowa too, is that, like, okay, yeah, they are on paper better than a lot of the teams on the schedule. But if the offense doesn't improve, then all of a sudden you're playing in, you know, like last year, like a 14-7, 10-7 type game. at that point, it's a coin flip, right? Because at that point, one touchdown can win the game. And so that's the problem is that, like, okay, yeah, you are on paper better than a lot of the teams on the schedule, but will you be able to win every coin flip game if every game is one possession because your offense just simply can't score, right? So that's the problem. And I think the big question is, can they just creep back towards average? I'm not talking about, you know, Iowa does not have to have an elite offense by any means, but if you can creep back towards average, maybe get like a top 75 offense in there, top 70, right? Then we're talking about a legitimate team that could compete for a playoff spot. And I think that's another thing is a really good point by you, is that the committee is not just, you know, qualifying for the playoff. The committee has to put you in the playoff, right? So if Iowa goes 10-2 for some reason, and the committee's like, okay, we have a 10-2 Iowa, and we have a 10-2 ACC team, and a 10-2 Big 12 team. If you're deciding between the three of them, they might go with the sexier team, right, in the ACC or Big 10. We've seen that happen before, even last year, right, where Florida State, by all accounts, should have been in the playoff with a 13-0 record, and they left them out because they wanted to go for ratings. And unfortunately for Iowa, with how bad the offense has been recently, the ratings probably wouldn't be great. But just in terms of talent, though, like I'm with you, man. If they go 10-2, I mean, last year, every 10-2 Power 5 team would have made a 12-team playoff besides Oklahoma. And now all of a sudden, the SEC and Big 10 are now seen even more so as miles ahead of the ACC and Big 12. So I think 10-2 in the Big 10 and SEC, 10-2 basically guarantees you a spot, I think, in the playoff. It's when you get to the 9-3, then it gets a little hairier, and then all of a sudden you're comparing a 9-3 to a 10-2 Big 12 or ACC team, and that gets a little tough. But if they win 10 games, though, absolutely, I think Iowa should expect to get in the playoff this year.
It's you're gonna make people excited about that, I will bring people back down, because here's the thing. You mentioned that super quantitative term, sexy. Iowa, even when they are good and sexy, self-proclaimed nationally, just maybe the least sexy team that there is. Yeah. And so you're right. You start to look at those same record teams where there's no common opponent, and you're like, well, now we have to compare their losses and their wins. That's going to be tough. When you go back to the schedule that we just talked about, you're like, okay, who's the great wins then? Like, where are the great wins? Okay, well, maybe if you don't have great teams on your schedule, you can win by a lot of points. Iowa doesn't do that.
Yeah.
It may come down to, if they have two losses, let's say it's Ohio State and, I don't know, Wisconsin or somebody. Mm-hmm. Can you keep the game close against Ohio State? Can we not get blown out like they have in the Big Ten Championship two of the last 3 years, like they did at Ohio State? Gosh, was that 2 years ago? Last year, 2 years ago? And I know Ohio State is just looked at as this, like, superhero team this year. Mm-hmm. From your standpoint, knowing what Ohio State has firepower offensively, can the Iowa defense keep it close in that game?
I think it's certainly possible for the reason that I think – Ohio State is going to be very much reliant on the run game. And anytime you rely on a run game as an offense, you might not be putting up, like, Ohio State very much could still put up 45 points per game. I'm not saying they can't, but it's not like a Washington last year where it's like, okay, quick hitter, 75 yard touchdown, bang, and the 80 yard touchdown, bang. Like, it's not like that. It's more like, I think Ohio State's gonna be really methodical as an offense this year because of that elite rushing attack they have. And that could in turn make it more of a low scoring game. Now, Will Howard's still a good passer. Ohio State still has an elite receiving core with Emeka Egbuka, by all accounts, might be a superstar already in Jeremiah Smith as a true freshman. He was the number one recruit in the country, and he looks unbelievable already in everything I've seen from him. So he could be an immediate impact player. But I think with Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson, this is going to be a really run-reliant team. And Iowa in history has really defended the run pretty well. Now, I'm not saying Iowa has a chance to beat Ohio State, because I think Ohio State is I think they're the best team in the country. I'm picking them to win the national title this year. But I do think, like, that's a great point that you just made right there, where it's like, if they can keep it close, if they can keep it to 14 or fewer points, then if you go 10-2, you look at that and they go, okay, Ohio State's our number one team in the country, and they lost by 14 of them. 10-2 Iowa against a 10-2 Big 12 or ACC team, that we should probably give the nod to Iowa there. So that's going to be really, really interesting. And even if they go 10, like a 10-2 record might be also good enough to get into the Big Ten title game too, right? So if you get in the Big Ten title game, that could be good too. So that's a really interesting point that I think, losing to Ohio State's almost a given, but by how much is a big question, honestly.
Unless there's a lot of parity, with 18 teams, I think it's going to be tough at 10-2.
Yeah.
It would have to be through a tiebreaker. And it could be, and I think I saw something how it might come down to a coin flip at some point. But you've got Oregon now in the Big Ten. They're supposed to be really good. Gabriel is like, I don't know, maybe one of the best quarterbacks in the country. It's going to be tough to see, assuming that Ohio State is the first team in. You know, Oregon, Michigan is sort of a question mark, I think, in a lot of ways. But Michigan, Penn State, Oregon all losing two games. And then Iowa getting, you know, somehow getting the nod over, you know, those two or three teams that are also 10-2. We might need some help from you know, quote unquote, the little guys. Like Northwestern needs to like knock off Oregon or whoever, you know, whoever plays Oregon in the middle of the season, catch them sleeping. But it does suck. And this is the story that it's kind of always been for Iowa is, hey, can we make our losses look good and not make our wins look good? It was the case in 2015 when we went undefeated. We really didn't get a whole lot of respect all season. Again, we didn't have any crazy good wins that year. Schedule was not, you know, high on the RPI. I would love to see what it would have been. And then we go and we lose basically in the last 30 seconds as they reach the ball over the goal line, and we lose by like 3 points. And then the storyline after that week is, you know, after that day, we're looking at bowl games, is like, oh, I was legit. They only lost to Michigan State by, you know, in the last minute of the game. We're like, well, what about the 12 wins we put together? Does anybody respect those that we just, so it's just the way it is. It is going to be interesting. The new Big Ten is weird. And, you know, I think as a team podcast, not a college football podcast at large, but just like, hey, we're cheering for one team here, especially Iowa being that team. From our point of view, it's now, you know, we are a team in there with a few others, Wisconsin, Penn State. Our goal every year is now to basically be in the conversation. We want to be in the conversation for that 12-team playoff. And it looks like this year, the first inaugural year, we have a chance to do that. Last thing, you mentioned Luke Lachey. Assuming he's healthy, you know, health is always a factor for every team and every situation. Where does he rank, you know, going into this season, based on your guys' thoughts, tight ends across the country? Is he top five, top three? Where's he at?
I think I put him top 10, back half of the top 10, only because of the injuries.
Ooh. And
yeah, I know. Ohio fans aren't going to like me for
that. I think he'll come out and surprise people, and that'll change quickly.
I think so too. I think that is one of those where I put him like, I think I put him at 9 or 10. And then I right when I put it down, I was like, I know he's going to make this look wrong, but it's a combination of a couple of things. I think one of them is that, one, the health, right? He missed a lot of time last year, as did a lot of tight ends. Actually, if you look at my top 10 tight ends list, like, I think like 6 or 7 of them like are coming off season ending injuries. Right. So, it's kind of insane, like how much the tight end position has been banged up last year as well. But I think the other thing is that when he was healthy, he was behind Sam Laporta on the depth chart in 2022. He looked really, really good as a backup tight end. Don't get me wrong. He made a lot of great plays, which is why we're so high on him to begin with, you know, going into this year. But he didn't have like the pure numbers that other guys did to warrant a top five spot. Now, I'm not saying the ceiling is not top five. I think it absolutely is. I think this guy, like I said, he could be the next Kittle, Hockenson, Laporta, Fant, right? Anything like that. Like, he is a really special talent. I think he could be a top five tight end in next year's draft, absolutely, or even higher than that, honestly. But I just think the production, I weigh production very, very heavily into my preseason rankings, and he just, because of the injuries and because when he was healthy, he was behind Laporta on the depth chart, that's why he was like back half the top 10. But I am fully admitting that he could absolutely make that look very wrong by the time the season's over.
It's a fair grade. I think it's hard, and I probably, if I were to do rankings as well, would base a lot of my stuff on what they've done, not what they could do. And I think a lot of Lachey, and it's a lot of the reason why Hawkeye Nation is excited, is because a lot of his hype is projection. It's his potential. It's the flash that he's given us of what if he could do that for a whole season. And I think what helps him is, you know, granted they kind of were both out at the same time, but having McNamara back is going to be huge. it's hard to be a top tight end if your quarterback can't get the ball to you. And, you know, obviously Iowa has struggled with that the last 2 to 3 years. So be interesting to see. Max, thank you for joining the show today, talking Hawks. You can come back anytime. Maybe we'll talk after the season, talk about some of these projections that we shot out and see how close we were. But thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
Everybody, thank you for listening to the show. We'll be back again next week. Until then, peace. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you want more, you can check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube by searching Washed Up Walk-Ons. And if you're interested in supporting the show, head over to patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can find bonus podcasts, merchandise, and other cool perks. Best part, half of your subscription benefits the kids at UI Children's Hospital. We'll see you next time. Hawks by a million.